Welcome to the From the Rabbi's Desk Shiur, which hopefully we'll be meeting every week around this time for about a half hour. The way we like to do it is, this is like a pretty easy shiur for me to prepare because I don't really prepare anything. I just tell you the three most interesting shailas that came up this week. You tell me which one you're most interested in hearing about, and then we talk about it. And if we get through one, we'll get to the next one, okay? Sound fair? So one shaila that came up this week, it's actually two shailas, but they're very, very connected to each other, very similar to each other. One case was a guy bought a pair of reading glasses from a store that happens to have a very generous return policy, and they came in a box. He's a guy who's a couple of years older than me, and his eyes are starting to go, so I'm not holding there yet with the reading glasses, but he's there, and he opens up the box when he gets home, and the glasses are broken. So what are you going to do? The store has a generous return policy, so he goes back to the store, and he sees the line by the returns is like a 45-minute line, and he's not interested in waiting in line for 45 minutes. He has the box open with the glasses. He sees the aisle where he got them from. There's a whole bunch of other glasses in the aisle in closed boxes. He could just go over and put the box that he has back and take another one and walk out of the store. He's pretty confident he's not going to be arrested for shoplifting. If he does that, he'll be able to get away with it. The store would take it back. He just doesn't have 45 minutes to wait in line. So is he allowed to do that? A similar shaila, I was at a wedding this week, and a guy told me that he went to his favorite breakfast place and he asked for a bagel, egg, and cheese. It's very clear. Bagel, egg, and cheese. Bagel, egg, and cheese, let's say, cost, I have no idea what these things cost, let's say cost $6. Bagel, egg, let's say $5. Those aren't 5 pounds prices. Double that, right? But bagel, egg, let's say $5, right? So he goes back to his office, he pays for the bagel, egg, and cheese, $6, goes back to his office, opens up what he has, and he looks in it, it's a bagel and egg, and they left out the cheese. So what can you do? He can always go back to the store and say, I want a dollar back. But he only goes to the store during the busiest breakfast hour, when the place is like chaotic, it's crazy. So he wants to go back the next day, order a bagel, egg, and cheese, and then when he goes to the cash register and they say, what did you order? To just say, bagel, egg. And that way he'll even the score, right? That would even things out. So is he allowed to do that, or does he have to go through the whole process of having to explain to them what happened? And that, you know, so that I'm counting as one shaila, because they both happened to come up this week, but they're essentially the same shaila, right? They're about can you take the law into your own hands in that case? A second shaila that came up. I got a voicemail from my chavrusa. Maybe I'll just play you the voicemail. I got a voicemail from my chavrusa, from Rabbi Rosner. I call him my chavrusa. We haven't learned together in like 7 years, but maybe even more. But you know, like when you have a chavrusa like that, you hang on as tight as you can, right? So here's the voicemail. If you can't hear it, I'll say it afterwards.
Hi, question. I'm out for Shabbos. I'm not near my svarim. Could you please look up, or maybe you know, somebody, a woman from my shul, is coming back to Israel. And there's a guy who ships corneas for eye transplants to Israel. It's all legit, it's all legal, just for, he's a big Baal Chesed, and he gets corneas from all over the world and ships it. And she's a Kohen, she's an Ashes Kohen, and she's flying with her kids. So she wants to know if there's any issue about corneas and Tumas Ohel. So let me know if you think.
Right, you heard the Shaila? Right? So she's going to bring a bag... box, I don't know, of corneas. I don't know what you put corneas in. She's going to bring a little freezer case of corneas in the carry-on, right? And bring them. I remember when I was a student here in YU, by the library, for some reason the library was the only building on campus that did this. When you walked in, they would check your bags. Every other building you could bring in whatever you wanted, but they would check your bags. Rabbi Chaim was teaching Shechita, because Rabbi Chaim does that, you know, when he gives his own smicha, he's teaching shechita to the guys, and to the Sephardic guys, because he's not going to give smicha without shechita and treifas and whatever. So he was teaching treifas, actually, and he brought in a head of an animal one day to show the different treifas in the head and the skull and the brain, and he just left it there, you know, after he's done in the base medrash, in the morgue, you know, in the base medrash, the Sephardic base medrash there. So he just left so the guys were, like, so excited. They put it in a plastic bag, and they immediately ran to the library, and the security guard said, check your bag. And they open up the bag. He looks. He says, okay. And they're like, what would not be okay? Like, I'm literally bringing a severed head into the building. Like, What would not be okay? But over here, the person's bringing corneas, however they're wrapped, so they want to know if they're allowed to bring it on a plane with them. That is Shaila number two. Shaila number three is the following. I got an email from a woman who lives in Israel. She tells me her name and our connections. We have a couple of different connections through my son, through her brother, whatever. Anyway, she writes, while at work, I was listening to your Daf Yomi Shir on Maseches Brachos around Daf Chaf Aleph about the prohibition of a Balkeri to learn Torah. I work in an IVF lab, IVF, not IDF, IVF lab, right, in vitro fertilization lab, processing sperm, and I happened to be handling sperm at the time I was listening to this shiur. It dawned on me that this might be a problem. I know it's not directly related to Takanas Ezra, meaning she's telling me I'm not a complete Amaritz. I know it's not about what that sugi was about. Can I listen to Torah while handling in my presence open sperm? Or is it different than Mei Raglayim and Soa? It is a pretty relevant question for me, as the work I do in the lab is relatively rote and allows me to listen to shiurim throughout the day. I really enjoy the shiurim v'chalei v'chalei. So she wants to know, can she listen to shiurim in the IVF lab? Good, so we have three shilas. We have taking the law into your own hands, we have corneas in the carry-on, and we have CD Torah? I don't know how to... Okay, we have Zara listening to shiurim while handling Zara. Any preferences?
Is it weird to say that I want the third one?
Nothing is weird. From you, for sure. No, it's absolutely fine. All those who prefer number one, which is taking the law into your own hands? All those who prefer the second one, which was corneas? Couple more, okay. And all those who prefer Zera. Wow, it's pretty even. Oh gosh, now I don't know what to do.
We have to do both.
Okay, so let's. I guess let's start with the last one because that's the one that's open on my computer. So we'll start. We'll start with the last one. It's never even. Usually, there's like one that wins in a landslide. Okay. So let's start with this one. So what are the issues? First of all, if you've ever been to an IVF lab, I had the privilege last January, I was on a trip with a number of Rabbanim to Eretz Yisrael that was organized by Rabbi Shai Schechter and paid for by a very generous friend of ours. And he sent essentially seven or eight Rabbanim to go around and learn. To learn from Rav Asher Weiss, we sat in on his Beis Din a couple of times, and we went to Rav Yitzchak Silberstein, and we went to the Kleisenberger Rebbe, and just different things that we could learn about. We met with Mrs. Sha'er, the mother of Gilad Sha'er, one of the three boys we had. It was just an unbelievable experience. The whole trip was an unbelievable experience. And one of the things that we did was that we went to Shari Tzedek, and we visited the lab in Shari Tzedek where they make babies. And it's incredible. Rav Asher Weiss was giving us the tour because he's the posek of Shari Tzedek. So we all had to put on, you know, the scrubs and whatever. Rav Asher was not willing to put the scrubs on over his hat, but he gave us because people were taking pictures. You know, he gave us the tour of the lab. It is the cleanest place you could ever, as you probably imagine, right? It does not feel like some gross, you know, Beis HaMerchatz, you know, Beis HaKisei outhouse kind of place. It is pristine, obviously, and that you got to wear scrubs when you go in there. So it's like, it's a little bit funny to hear that this might be an issue when you consider like the reality on the ground of, you know, of how it is, but that does not necessarily determine the halacha. We should realize that it's a great bracha that we have. You know, we have the ability to increase the numbers of Klal Yisrael. You know, in Shari Tzedek, it's unbelievable what they're doing. How many babies are born? It's the busiest hospital in the world per capita in terms of the amount of people that it serves and the number of babies that come into the world through that hospital. And they said in the IVF lab, there are some women that come that have seven or eight children already, and they're having fertility problems because they can't have number nine, and they'll come and they'll get fertility treatments in order to be able to have, like, you know, this is the metzius that they're dealing with. It's just so they have a very active lab, is what I'm trying to say. So what are the issues over here? So it seems that the issues are two very simple things. What is the status of Shechva Zera, right? Is Shechva Zera the same as Tzoa Umei Raglayim, or is it not? And what once we know its status, so what does that mean for us, right? What are the halachos that are relevant to it? So as far as the status of Sheikh Vazar, it's not perfectly 100% clear. The Rama in Siman Ayin Vav, in Hilchos Kriyashma, in Se'if Dalet, the Rama writes, quoting the Maharil, which a lot of things in the Rama, in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Rama in particular, are quoted from the Maharil. It's the Maharil, Shem Sedesh, and certain Gedolei Ashkenaz that are very often quoted. Shechva Zera al Besaro, Dino Kitsoa. Whoa. If a person has Shechva Zera on their body, Besaro, what does it mean, al Besaro? Their skin, right? That it's on their body. Dino Kitsoa. It has a din of Tsoa. And what's the din of Tsoa? If you have Tsoa al Besaro, are you allowed to say Kriyashma? So very clearly not, right? You're not allowed to say Kriyashma or any Davar Shabakdusha or anything like that. So if a person has actual excrement on them, right, that would be a problem. And Shechva Zera, sperm, has the same status. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Dino Kitsoa, Ratzalomer al Kein Yesh Lahachmir Ba Kishihi al Besaro Afshi Mechusa. See, the thing about having Tsoa on your body is even if it's covered, you're still not allowed to say Kriya Shema or learn Torah or do anything when it's on your body, even if it's covered up. But certainly if it's exposed, you're not, even if it's not on your body. The idea of it being al-basaro, the chiddush of it being al-basaro, is that even if it's covered and it's on your body, you're not allowed to say Kriya Shema. But if it's exposed, then it doesn't need to be al-basaro, it's asar anyway. If it's exposed in the room, of course you're not allowed to say Kriya Shema or anything like that. So if we're just looking at this Ramah, it seems pretty clear that any holy matters should not be spoken or even thought around Shechva Zera, right, in this lab. Mishnah Berurah quotes a Sefer Chassidim where it's Muchach Ta'afilu al Begadav Umchuso Yesh Lerachzo Olapashlo Shliyadavuk Ba'atuma. He says, and you know what? Even if it's not on your skin, even if it's on your clothing and it's covered up, where strictly speaking, if you had Soa that was on your clothing and then covered up with something else, it would be mutter. Right? If you covered Tsoa, it's mutter. If you have excrement in a test tube or something, and it's covered, it's sealed, you're allowed to say Dvar Meshabekdusha. So the same thing, if it's on your, not your body, but your clothing, and you cover it with something, it would be mutter. Says the Sefer Chassidim, when it comes to Shechva Zera, clean it off. You don't want it there. Why? Because you are being Davuk Bituma. Tsoa is one thing. This is worse in a certain sense, because it also represents Tuma. Shechva Zera represents Tuma. And then the Mishnah Berurah says, and there's another reason why it's worse. How did that Shechva Zera get there when it's on a person's body, when it's on a person's clothing? It usually got there because there was a violation of Zera Levatala. You need to carry around a reminder of Zera Levatala? Certainly not. Get rid of it. You want to get rid of any remnant of such a reminder. So just from the Ramah, it seems that if a person has actual exposed Zera, so you don't have the same concern of a reminder of Zera Levatala. This is quite the opposite of Zera Levatala. Why is this quite the opposite of Zera Levatala? Yeah, this is, you're using this for the greatest thing, right? This is exactly what it's meant for. So it's not exactly Zera Levatala, but as far as it being Tsoa, it's a problem. So when I asked my brother Shlita this question, he immediately said, it's a Ramah, it's got to have a din of Tzoa, it would be Aser. But then I looked it up in Shulchan Aruch, and I looked around, and I saw on the side of the page, all the Achronim argue on this Ramah. Magen Avraham on the side of the page, the Gra on the bottom of the page, both say that it does not have a din of Tzoa, and they bring Rayas. Hey, I'll tell you the Rayas, you'll tell me why it's a Raya. Gemara in Shabbos, Tav Kuf Yudal Ramad Aleph, tells us as follows. Amr b'chia bar Abba, Amr b'yochran. Kol Talmud Chacham shenimtza revav al bigdo chayev misa. If a Talmud Chacham has an oil stain on his clothing, he's chayev misa. Pretty harsh. Shneimer kol misanei avu maves al tikri misanei ela masnei. Meaning, don't read it as those who hate me, but those who cause others to hate me. Meaning, if the Talmud Chacham represents, to a certain extent, God's shluchim, right? So, and someone is disgusted by a Talmud Chacham, or someone thinks the Talmud Chacham is a lowlife, or he's a schlepper, or whatever. That's a Chilul Hashem, and for that Chilul Hashem, he's Chayiv Misa. so far nothing to do with Shechva Zera. Says the Gemara, Ravina Amar Reved Itmar. It's not an oil stain, it's Reved. What's Reved? Says Rashi, Shechva Zera. That if a Talmud Chacham has Shechva Zera on his clothing, then he's Chayev Misa. Says the Magen Avraham, you see from there that Shechva Zera is not the same as Tzoa. How do you see it from there? It seems pretty harsh about Shechva Zera there, no? How do you see that it's not the same as Tzoa?
I mean, I assume Talmud Chacham would be learning, and if he has it on him and if it was Tzoa, he wouldn't be able to learn.
Ah, right? I mean, the Gemara is saying, first of all, saying only a Talmud Chacham is a problem. And what's the problem? The Chil Hashem, that people will look down at him. How about the problem that if he's a Talmud Chacham, he's got to learn? If he's a Talmud Chacham, he's got to daven. Guess what? Even if you're not a Talmud Chacham, got to learn. even more reason, got to learn. If you're not a Talmud Chacham, got to daven. Right? So everybody's got. So forget about the fact. Forget about the fact that that it will make other people disrespect him. There's a more fundamental problem. How's he supposed to go on with his day? Says the Magen Avraham, you have a raya from there that it doesn't have a din of tzela. Strongest raya, not the strongest raya? What do you think?
Maybe it's not when he's learning.
Okay, it's not when he's learning.
The Gemara is focusing on a single issue. It's not dealing with these
problems. Yeah, I mean, the Gemara is focused on the issue of what he's going to be chayv misa for. You're not chayv misa for not learning at that moment, you know, until you change your clothing. You're not chayv misa for not davening, you know, when you're walking in public. We want to talk about someone's walking in public. He's going to be, so we want to show he's going to be chayv misa for this. So that's it's difficult to understand the raya, but the Magen Avraham brings this as a raya. Magen Avraham brings the second raya. That goes Maimonios in Parag Gimel of Hilchos Yom Kippurim talks about, you know, on Yom Kippur, what are you not allowed to do? So there are Chamesh Shinuim on Yom Kippur. There are five things you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur. When they teach little children in preschool, they tell them that there are five Inuim, except they lie about what they are, right? They say it's eating and drinking and leather shoes and anointing yourself and... That was Sikha and... I said Nilus Asandal already. And Rechitza and washing, right? Bathing. That, of course, those aren't the five. Those are four, what I just said, because eating and drinking are one. But what are they going to tell a little kid? Tashmish Amita? They can't say that. So that's the way you don't want a kid growing up thinking there are four. So that's how they, you know, that's the end around, right? So you tell them that there are five, and then you list what might be five. Like, you know, it's like Ilu, they say, eating donuts and eating pizza, right? I mean, that's obviously the same one. So anyway, the what happens if a person has something dirty on them, that they just they have dirt or mud on them? So are you allowed to clean it off? Are you allowed to, even though you're not allowed to wash on Yom Kippur? So you have something disgusting on you, you're allowed to take it off. So it says the Hagos Maimonios, if a person has Shechva Zera on himself, he can wash it off on Yom Kippur, right? Says the Magen Avraham, of course he has to wash it off. What do you do all day in Yom Kippur? You be davening all day. Chiddush, he could wash it off because it's considered something that he doesn't want there. If he's rugil to generally wash these things off because he's generally disgusted by it, he can wash it off Yom Kippur. You got to wash it off. You got to daven. Elamai, you see that it does not have a din of tzela. A third raya, not brought by the Magen Avraham, brought by the Gra on the bottom of the page. Gemara in Sukkah daf chav vavan beis. Gemara in Sukkah says that according to Rabbi Yossi, young people have to take off their tefillin at night, and certainly cannot put tefillin on at night, mipnei shiragilim betuma, because they become tamei at night. What does that mean? They become tamei at night? Probably means, sounds like it means that they're motzi zera at night. So says the Gemara, must be Rabbi Yossi holds that just because they're a balkeri, they're not allowed to wear tefillin. Just because they were motzi zera, there's an isser to wear tefillin. And a balkeri is also a neach tefillin. Gemara says, no, you misunderstood. When we say they're going to become tamei at night, it means young married men who are going to be with their wives at night. And that's why they have to take off their tefillin, because they're going to be intimate with their wives. And that you can't do in your tefillin. Says the Gra, the Gemara's maskana therefore is that if not for the fact that they were with their wives, even though they're being motzi zera, forget about that there's zera there, they're being motzi zera, they'd be allowed to wear their tefillin. Even at that moment, the Gra says. Sounds like from the Gemara. If it was tzoa, right, let's say the concern were that a person has a stomachache and that he's going to be motzi tzoa, that he has diarrhea or something. Would we allow him to wear his tefillin? Absolutely not. right? Not at the time that it's motzi, not at the time that it's around. Absolutely not. So you see clearly, says the Gra, that it does not have a din of tzoa. So that's the rayas that they bring. I asked both Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Shechter what they thought about this shayla. Rabbi Willig said, not a shayla. The Ramah didn't even really mean it. It's a chumra bialma. Even the Ramah didn't, you know. Sometimes Rabbi Willig gets excited about a shayla, ooh, and sometimes it's like, you know, come on, you know better than to ask that. This was the second one. I think all three shaylas I asked him this week were the second one. Rabbi Shechter also thought that we don't pass like that Ramah. He says the Ramah meant it, but he said we don't pass like that Ramah. We pass like the Grah, like the Magen Avraham. However, a person, I mentioned this in my shul, and a guy in my shul who's an anesthesiologist told me, well, you know, he says, I do anesthesia a lot of times when they're doing like a colonoscopy on somebody, and the other guy doing the colonoscopy is a from doctor, and we're both learned daf yomi, so, like, what do? You talk in learning. That's not okay, right? If you do the colonoscopy, you cannot be talking and learning. He said, yeah, sometimes it smells pretty bad, and then we usually stop. Even before it gets to that point, they should find something else to talk about during that time. That for sure would be awesome.
Is there a difference between talking, thinking, or just listening to
a shiur? So that's the other thing I wanted to get to. What about hirhur in general? Maybe when you're listening, you're just thinking. You know, I had a shaila last summer. A guy emailed me that he had gone to the guy's rabbi emailed me. He told me that this fellow had was working a summer internship somewhere, and the office closes during the summer at like 6 o'clock because no one was working too hard during the summer. No one was working too late during the summer. The guy had left his knapsack or his whatever bag in the office, and it was like 8 o'clock at night. But he had his key card. He was going to be able to get into the office. So he went into the office, he had his key card, and the place was totally empty. It was like 8 o'clock at night. And while he was there, before he picked up his bag, he realized he had to go to the bathroom, so he went to the bathroom, and he closed the door. And then after he was finished going to the bathroom, the door was broken. The lock got jammed, and he was stuck in the bathroom. So he had no idea how long he was going to be in the bathroom. Now, normally, if you're stuck someplace for a long time, your biggest fear is you better not drink too much because you're going to have to go to the bathroom. Well, that was not a concern. But his shaila was, is he allowed to drink? Is he allowed, and if he drinks, does he say a bracha, right, on the water that he's going to drink? Is he allowed to learn? Can he think in learning? Can he chazer over, you know, the daf yomi in his head, at least be hirhur, right? Is he allowed to do any of that in the bathroom? So what exactly is the status of hirhur versus other things, and what is the status of like a very clean place that happens to be? I mean, our bathrooms are, you know, when the Gemara spoke about a Beis Hakise, like their kitchens weren't as clean as our bathrooms are, right? Right. I'm not talking about like a porta potty at the Jets game, you know. Like I'm in a nice bathroom that's cleaned on a consistent basis. So there is a difference between hirhur and divrei Torah, but not as far as the halacha of tzoa is concerned, not as far as excrement and the like. The difference between hirhur and dibur is in terms of erva, when there's exposed skin that would qualify as erva. The Torah says l'yirbucha erva's davar, and the Gemara in Shabbos Taf Chav Gimel learns that an unclothed person is not allowed to be medaber b'divrei Torah. So if, let's say, a person is in the shower, he shouldn't be talking and learning with, in the locker room, he's in the shower, the guy in the next stall, he shouldn't be talking and learning, right? If a person is not clothed. However, it's on that halacha that we say, dibur asur, hir hur mutter, that he's allowed to be thinking and learning. So Rav Avadya Yosef writes in a tshuva that it seems pashut that if a guy is taking a shower, he's allowed to listen to a shir while he's taking a shower. If a person is thinking, a guy, girl, doesn't matter, you can listen to a shir while taking a shower. But wait a second, forget about the fact that there's erva. What about the fact that a bathroom is a dirty place, says Rav Avadya. So Rav Avadya says, you know, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos Dav Yud that there are three sections to a Beis HaMerchatz, that the old bathhouses had three sections to it. There was the innermost room where everybody was unclothed. There was the outermost room where everybody was dressed. And then there was the changing room, right, in between, the middle room. He said, in the innermost room, for sure, you're not allowed to, you know, talk or think in Divrei Torah. The outermost room, you could put on your tefillin, you could daven, you could do whatever you want. The middle room is tricky. The Ran says no speaking divrei Torah, but hirhur is mutter in the middle room. And therefore, if someone asks a shaila in Isravahet, or if someone asks something asr mutter, even though that requires you to think through the sugya, as long as you don't explain the answer, right? You don't do what we're doing now. You just say asr mutter. You're allowed to do that because all the divrei Torah are happening in your head, and that you're allowed to do. So the Rav Vadya writes in Yabia Omer Chelak Hei Simin Yer Aleph that you're allowed to listen to my radio show. Vadya wrote Yechavadas, right? Yechavadas was from his radio show. He was not only the most important Sephardic rabbi probably since at least the Ben Ishchai, but maybe even the Beit Yosef. He was also a radio host. He had a show where people, on Motzei Shabbos, I think it was, that people would call in, I think for decades he had the show, people would call in and ask shailas. And then he would just, you know, rattle off the whole sugya with the Rishonim and, you know, neatly package together an answer for you. And from that show, the Sefer Yechavadas was produced. Yabia Omer was not produced that way. That's why, if you ever read a tshuva in Yechavadas, Rabbi Shai Shaft always tells me, he thinks like high schools should learn Yechavadas, meaning that's the way to learn halacha. That's it, because it's like basic, it's clear, he shows you where everything comes from. Yabia Omer is overwhelming. Yabia Omer will have like 10 pages of V'chein Kasa, V'chein Kasa, V'chein Kasa, just names of Sfarim you've never heard of. You know, but in Yechavadas, he didn't have time to think. He didn't have time to research. So it was just, you know, it's just a clear presentation of the sugya. So if people would call and ask all sorts of shaylos. So one time, a woman called in and said, you know, I don't really have any time to go to shiurim or to learn, but on Erev Shabbos, you know, when I take a shower for Shabbos, I like to play your, the recording of your show. Am I allowed to do that? So says Rav Vadya, yes, you're allowed to play my radio show. It's all Divrei Torah. Yeah, but our bathrooms at least are like the middle room of a bathhouse. And therefore, in the middle room of a bathhouse, here are mutter. Probably Dibur is mutter also, but I wouldn't go that far, he says. Rabbi Willig did go that far. Rabbi Willig said that if this guy is stuck in the bathroom, he could say a bracha on the water before he drinks it, he could take out a sefer and learn. He thought that in that case, if it's a clean bathroom, he thought that that would be... the guy ended up sitting in the bathroom for like 3 hours till the cleaning crew came in, you know, at 11 o'clock at night.
Lechachila, you think? Or just because
no, in this case, I don't think lechachila he would say, you know, your afternoon seder should be learned in the bathroom. But in this case, he was willing to be make. Now, there are a couple of other factors just to keep in mind over here. First of all, the woman said to me that, she wrote to me that it smells sometimes. You know, the shechvazer itself gets smelly. So should that be a concern? Meaning, even if it's not soa, what if something smells? What if you're davening a shul and the guy next to you, you know, just came from the gym? So he comes with a cloud around him, right? So are you allowed to continue to daven? So it seems that Chazal were only concerned about some smells, right? About smells of tsoa, meraglayim, of urine and excrement. It doesn't seem that they were concerned about smells, even if they're bad smells. No, when I was in Keren Biavna, when I was learning in Keren Biavna, we were, it still is, I think, right near the kibbutz, where there were a lot of chickens. And when the wind would blow in a certain direction, the whole yeshiva reeked, right? So someone went to Rav Rubinstein, who's the posik there, and said, are we allowed to say brachos? Like when, you know, when the wind is blowing in this direction, he said, why wouldn't you be allowed to say brachos? They're like, because the smell, he said, what smell? You know, if you're there for long enough, you get used to it. But, you know, that taka is a problem. The halacha is, if you have the smell of tsoa, you have to go 4 amos away from where the smell ends. Not even 4 amos away from it, 4 amos away from where the smell ends. But it doesn't seem, if it's not soa, it doesn't seem that the smell would be an issue. You know, people said to me when I asked them the shaila, isn't it all in test tubes? No, she's the woman that takes it out of the test tube and puts it through the machine and actually deals with it. So it's not all in test tubes, it's exposed. So if you hold like the Ramah, you would have that problem. I would point out that even though she says her job is very rote, it's probably very important that she focus on what she's doing. You know, we do not want confusion, the wrong zera going with the wrong egg or anything like that. And that's why they have mashkichim in Shari Tzedek. They have like serious mashkichim that are making sure that everything is done properly. Someone said to me, you skipped the most important part of the shayla. Why is a woman learning daf yomi? You have to talk about whether women are allowed to learn Gemara or not. Okay, you know, that's for a different time. So have a wonderful evening, everybody. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Take care.